what we have to do and how big is the game today. But we keep playing, you know, like we train, you know. The week has been fantastic. All the lads are being working very hard, you know, and that's the mentality we have to keep going with it.
And the reason the Reds are so concerned is really nobody in the league is better than this guy, Higuain, at getting the ball up and down. He does it here, and he scores. It's really unbelievable.
Oh, tough, tough, tough way for the Revs to go down in Columbus the other night, losing to the Crew by a final tick of 1-0. Federico Higuain, man. You know, Brian, who's in studio with us today, the man himself, Brian Speak, said it to me on Thursday. Or last week. It wasn't Thursday. It was last week. The New England had to be very aware of Federico Higuain. And Brian, it comes back to bite the New England Revolution once again.
Twice. The one-trick ponies, Columbus Crew, strike again. The Crew can do one thing correctly, and the Revs let them do it again. Just mind-boggling.
Will Blasini's here as well. Good morning. Good morning, brother.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are we doing this fine evening? Or morning?
Well, it will be evening by the time people hear it.
That is true.
Some people.
I'm trying to, you know, read the future. I'm a truth sayer. I'm a future sayer. I have a crystal ball with me to my right. It's also known as a Dunkin' Donuts coffee. So,
sounds me. I'm to the right.
Damn. Well, you guys,
you can be my crystal ball.
Yes.
You guys get the love fest going on today, right? We got Will Blasini and Brian Speaks in studio, which is a fun dynamic, and I'm looking forward to it. We got a New York guy and a New Englander in one room. I'm on the other side of the glass, so I can't be in there for the bloodshed.
And you've put me in a whole new room. Like, I'm so out of my element today.
I can barely even see you. Turn that light on. Go.
Turn the light. Oh, okay. Yeah, we don't want to have fun. Too much fun in the dark over
here.
Yeah,
you guys are. You guys are sitting in
Although
the dark
we could.
Over there.
We could.
I can barely see you.
I didn't even know there was light in here.
Revs 1-0 losers over the Columbus Crew Saturday night, and still sitting in third place, mind you, comfortably for now. 13-13-3 on the year, so back to 500 for New England. 42 points, 3 behind Sporting Kansas City, still tied in the win column. Sporting Kansas City in second with 45 points, 13-10-6. But be very aware, New Englanders, be very aware. Be a little afraid, too, because sitting in fourth place with 41 points, 10 wins, 8 losses, and 11 ties. Last year's Community Shield winners, Mike Petke's New York Red Bulls.
Supporter Shield.
Community Shield is in England.
I was going to say, what are you talking about, man? Come
I'm
on.
Sorry.
We are
the United States
of America here. This is America.
I've been catching up on Men in Blazers, so I've been keeping my mind in England today, but I got to bring it back. Supporter Shield.
I was going to say, bring it
Trophy winners, New York Red Bulls, fourth place, 41 points. And 10-8-11. Will Blasini's very happy with that 4-1 win New York had over Seattle the other night.
Of course. It was gorgeous. It was gorgeous to watch. I mean, Bradley Wright Phillips got 3 goals, and he is going to be breaking the MLS record. I'm going to think that he's probably going to get to 29 or 30. Yeah. My hope is that we see the big 3-0 by the end of the season. It will happen. Mark my words.
I was so irate at that game because I'm a fantasy nerd. He was listed as questionable, and I was like, all right, I'm gonna take him off my team. I didn't even have him on my bench. I literally got rid of him.
Oh, that's so disappointing. He would have brought you plenty of points.
He's been my captain like 8 weeks in a row.
Oh, it makes sense. It's just a given, though. They're at home. New York's at home. Bradley Wright Phillips comes onto the field. He's going to score a goal. It just seems to be something that occurs. You know, it's gravity.
Yeah, I learned my lesson.
It's okay.
Never listen to fantasy insiders, yeah. Ever.
Fantasy advice will just fail.
Yeah.
What happens on the field happens on the field.
Right. There you go. And what happened on the field, let's bring it back here for New England, wasn't very good. Let's go over that game from Thursday night, guys. I thought from the first 10 minutes, and listen, I said last week before the game that Jermaine Jones shouldn't start. Jay Heaps didn't start, and I thought I was fine with that decision. But I was interested to see Jay go out with what Comcast and MLSsoccer.com was saying, a 4-2-3-1 formation with Scott Caldwell and Daigo Kobayashi sitting as the two holding midfielders. And to be honest, Brian, I thought it was Daigo's worst game of the year.
I didn't really think he was that bad. I mean, he had a couple things here and there that were solid.
Well, when I say worst game of the year, he was not generating those same connecting passes that him and Lee are accustomed to making. You weren't seeing him get up the field the same way I thought, and slowing down defenders on the counterattack. I mean, I thought Columbus possessed the hell out of that game and really controlled the tempo all evening.
That's what Columbus does, though. Columbus has one of the best possession ratings in the entire league right now. And I mean, so Columbus played their game to a T. Like, they do two things. Like I said in the start, Higuain scores from a corner kick, and they possess the ball. Mm-hmm. That's it. Outside of that, they offer nothing.
Do you want water?
I'm good.
And Tony Chani, I have to say, was playing on point last night. That was one of the better games I've seen from him all season. And he's a dangerous, dangerous person to get on the ball. And we saw that last night. I mean, you know, they could have also probably scored a couple more times.
Saturday
in the first. Yeah, the other night. I said the other night, didn't I?
No, you said last night.
Oh, I said
last
night.
I just want to make sure you listen. We feel like
we're
at the weekend.
I have no concept of time. Time is relative.
At least he didn't call the supporter shield the community shield.
I know. Right,
let's stop throwing stones at a glass house here. Columbus finished tonight with, though, 56-44% possession. So, you know, to your point there, Brian, Columbus was able to play their game all evening long. And to your point, too, well, Tony Ticciani, I really did think, you know, as you said, he had a great game, and that lack of a physical presence on the field for that first half, I think, hurt the Revs.
Oh, yeah, 100%. I mean, he bulldozed his way through the midfield, and he was able to have slaloming runs in behind the New England defense. I mean, there was nothing to counter him, and there seemed to be nothing to slow him down, and I think that was very obvious by not having Jermaine Jones on the field, because he probably would have slowed Tony Chani down a bit, and I think later on, when he did come on, it slowed up a bit, just a bit.
Yeah, no, I mean, he definitely had a game that's probably one of his better games of the season. I mean, I don't watch Columbus often.
But not hearing Tony Chani.
Yeah, no, he looked legit, and he's just not a name you hear week in and week out in this league. So, yeah, he was able to do what he wanted, and to the detriment of the Revs.
And then another stupid foul that, all right, I'm not going to kill Darius as much this time as I did last time blatantly going after Federico Higuain. But this week, I mean, the same exact, as Brian said to open up the show, one damn trick pony does the same thing again. Gets the same spot in the same area. Heard Brad Feldman open it up there on Comcast. I mean, this guy is just clinical in what he does and locks it down for a goal. Ugh. And that was after Jermaine Jones got the referee to re-spot the ball.
Yeah, I mean, that was really rough.
That's even more frustrating.
I mean, Darius Barnes is one of those players. I love Darius Barnes. He's a great depth player for this team. But the two times he has looked really bad are both these situations. And it's just so frustrating because Columbus is not that good of a team. I don't see them being a playoff team. I think that Philly comes in.
You think that Philly sneaks in?
I think Philly does sneak in.
This was a huge win for Columbus, though.
It is, and it's I mean, maybe with this game, maybe that is the reason that Columbus can make the playoffs. They have a pretty soft schedule coming up. So, you know, they might be able to do it. You know, they have a couple rough games here and there, but it's just so hard because I don't want to put blame on Darius Barnes, but ultimately he's to blame.
No, I can see. Listen. It's just that one mistake that you have to point out, and you have to go to one guy, and one guy has to be that guy for a fall. It's Darius for this game. Moving forward, though, you have to just shake it off because Kansas City's so important for Friday. Like this, you have to blank this game out as quickly as possible. What's good for New England is that you went on that four-game, you had the five-game win streak, really. I mean, without that five-game win streak, we're not sitting here today and talking about a third-place team that just needs to brush themselves off and get themselves ready for Sporting Kansas City. We're talking about a much more desperate team in need of points for this weekend against Sporting. So I think we also have to keep things in perspective here and in sight when we see where this team stands right now and where they could still end up in the grand scheme of things. You know, it's not out of the realm of possibility that New England can still finish in second here. And, you know, we're going to talk more about it on Thursday. I'm hoping. And I talked to you guys a little bit about this before the show, but I'm hoping we get Simon Borg on here to talk about the game for Thursday. But this is a team that does well against opponents who play midweek games. New England is 7-2 this year against teams who play in midweek. And one of the loss, one was to, a loss was to New York, one was to Chicago. And Chicago played a U.S. Open Cup game prior. Other than that, New England is almost flawless on the year when they go up against teams who play in a midweek game. And Kansas City's got to play in Champions League this week. So I'm listen, this is a team that should feel confident going down to Blue Hell Friday night. They should they should be able to get themselves over this loss, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, Sporting plays tonight in the Champions League.
There you
actually.
Go.
Yeah.
Okay, I thought it was tomorrow night.
Pretty sure it's tonight.
I don't know. I originally when I looked okay. at my calendar, but I think you're right.
It's on Fox Sports One for those who have that channel.
Who has that? You can still find it.
That still exists.
Yeah, they're actually putting baseball on that channel for the playoffs. That's how you know baseball's on the decline. That's how you know nobody gives a damn that they're going to put it on cable television.
Finally.
No more network games. Bye-bye, Joe Buck.
But yeah, they're playing Real Esteli, and I think they're honestly they're probably going to win because they want to push farther in the Champions League, so they're clearly focusing on it. They've got together.
But are you
going to
throw out your best
results.
Starting lineup tonight if you're Sporting Kansas City?
I think they should.
With the
I think they should because I think that they have secured themselves. They know they're going to be in the playoffs 100%, and one of the things I think they're probably going to want to do is rest some players. They want to also push in the Champions League. A lot of teams in MLS are trying to keep on pushing that competition because that is a goal for MLS is to win the Champions League. You can eventually beat out a lot of these South American teams. I mean, Central American teams, sorry. So I wouldn't be surprised if Sporting Kansas City put together a relatively strong team against Real Esteli tonight.
Yeah, I that's what I'm expecting. It's what I'm hoping they do.
Yeah,
I really want all of MLS to get on the same page with the Champions League and realize it's a legit thing. And winning it, it looks good for the sport. It looks good for soccer in the U.S., I want it to happen, and I think that Sporting Kansas City probably has a better chance than most other teams have in the past.
Yeah.
I wouldn't disagree
them
with that.
Them in L.A.
Yeah, L.A. Yeah. is a pretty strong team. I wouldn't disagree with any of that you guys just said. I just look at it like this. New England is a well-rested team because they don't have all these outside competitions going on. And, you know, obviously right now Champions League is the biggest one out of all of them. But I've been harping on this point for a while, and I'm going to stay with it. That second home game is going to be critical in the playoffs. I honestly do believe that all we're waiting for is to find out who's going to finish 4-5. I think the 1, 2, and 3 is a lock right now. I think DC's going to finish first. I think Sporting and New England are a toss-up for who finishes 2nd and 3rd. And I know I see you shaking your head at me over there, Brian, but I still think Sporting Kansas City needs to make sure that they have a lock for that second home game. Because I think that second home game, if it's New England and Kansas City in the Eastern Conference semifinals, and that game is here in New England, Sporting Kansas City is going to get swept this year here in Foxborough. There is no doubt in my mind with how good New England has been at home this year that they will get to the Eastern Conference finals if they finish as a 2 seed and beat Sporting Kansas City. I think that's how it's going to play out. But here's the other side of it. Kansas City, as we were saying here, wants to do well in Champions League. But Peter Vermes, being the competitor he is too, needs to realize that finishing second is going to be, you know, needs to realize these points and realize how bad New England is on the road. So I just think, you know, you have to, there is a balancing act here tonight for Peter Vermes, whether you see it or not, because I just think managing guys at this stage of the season is so important because injuries could happen just like that.
My biggest disagreement with that is I just don't think that New England finishes third. I've said this right from the start. I still think the Red Bulls jump the Revs for third place. I mean, if you just look at the Red Bull schedule, they're at LA this week, then they're hosting 4 weeks in a row. They have 4 more home games. They're hosting Houston, Toronto, Columbus, and Montreal, and then they finish out the season in Kansas City.
See, and that
could be 12 points right there. I mean, we're just so. The thing is, the Red Bulls have shown at home, especially recently, that they are just unbeatable. They've beaten all the big teams at home. They beat Seattle at home. They beat DC at home. They beat Sporting Kansas City at home.
But are they going to be able to beat LA and Kansas City on the road?
But that doesn't matter. I think those the thing is, we're going to get 12 points out of those home games for sure. Those 12 points are going to be huge, especially when you line them up against what the Revs are going to have to do to try and keep pace with that.
I think
can you guarantee the Revs are going to get 12 points over these next couple games?
No.
No.
You can't. And that's just I can't guarantee you when Friday night against Sporting. Then they'll play Columbus. Then they're on the road.
But that's back here against Columbus.
Yeah, but then they're on the road for Montreal and Houston. Houston's one of the hardest teams to play in Houston.
Yeah. I won't argue with that.
They're so hard. I mean, you can never be guaranteed a point. I mean, if you just look at it. And Montreal, for some reason, seems to give the Revs fits. So you have two away games in this time frame that I can't guarantee a win.
Especially with Houston playing so well right now, because they are picking up speed really quickly, and I think they're trying to shoot for, close out the season pretty well, and they've shown that they can get results recently. They brought in a solid team. They have a great midfield. Their attacking is looking good. They shored up their defense, so they're trying to have a strong end to the season, and they're going to be a very hard team, and Dominic Kinnear's teams are always very hard to beat in Houston.
I think they're going to play spoiler for at least a team. I don't think they're going to make it in.
The way you guys are talking, it sounds like the team that's going to be spoiled the most here at the end of it when it's all said and done is New England. It's not going to be Columbus. That's what I'm getting here, at least. Right?
Columbus has it hard, too, though. I mean, they have... So, Columbus, they play Montreal this week. Easy. But then they're away against New England, Philly, and New York. And then they end the season against Philly at home. Those are three tough games for Columbus. I mean, I don't think they're going to beat any of those teams, honestly, away. I think that Revs, Philly, and New York all take care of Columbus. That's how I see it. I mean,
and they're just going to fall out. I mean, New England. I honestly
think
what happened
in Columbus. 12 points wouldn't be enough to keep New England in third place. Then 6 out of 12 points over these next four games wouldn't be enough to keep New England in third place.
It'll keep them above the line.
It'll keep them above the line. But yes or no? So no, it won't keep them above. Get them in third place for you, Will Blasini. If they take 9 points in their next three, Brian, I'll change it up. If they take 9 points in their next three, Brian, they beat Kansas City on the road, they win at home against Columbus, and then they go to Montreal and take three more points there, then they're guaranteed a third place spot. Tell me I'm wrong.
Okay. So they're guaranteed the third place spot. You can say that, but it hasn't happened yet. I mean, we went over this when Seattle Sporting came here. I can't overlook them ever. I will never, ever overlook them. I didn't overlook them when they didn't have Dwyer, Phil Harbor, or Colin. You cannot look past that team. They are one of the best teams in the entire league.
Out of all the teams that you saw this weekend and all the teams that you've seen over the past couple of weeks, who seems the most vulnerable right now of the top five teams?
In the East? I don't think Columbus...
Right, you said Columbus. So Columbus is the outlier for you guys then?
They're not a playoff team in my eyes.
No. Okay.
Because the thing is, honestly, based off of the way they performed against a New England team that struggled, they only got 1-0 off of that, I think, in Gillette.
Yeah.
New England's probably going to put them away. And I don't see them beating New York at home because that hasn't really happened once this year. And when they play Philadelphia is a team that honestly wants to get into that playoff spot and can. And I think they're going to leapfrog them.
And you said Columbus, they got to see Columbus in like a home-at-home series?
They see Columbus.
They go to Philadelphia on October 11th and then they... play at home on October the 26th to close out their season.
So Philadelphia's already done that once this year already with Toronto. And they took 6 points away from Toronto like it was nothing. So they should be able to do pretty well at a home-to-home series is what, you know, we see Philly doing. So, Brian, to your point, Columbus is the outlier and it's probably going down. Wouldn't disagree with that.
Yeah.
And then real quick on the... to finish up this Jermaine Jones, I know we went into a bunch of different directions here for the first 20 minutes, but bringing it back to the game a little bit more, I know one topic I wanted to hit was see if you guys thought the game was poorly mismanaged by the refereeing. I know that there was a lot of complaining from the Jermaine Jones angle of it. Brian, I'll get your opinion first on this. What did you think about the refereeing and how it affected the game overall the other night?
In the grand scheme of things, it wasn't awful. I mean, it was MLS officiating. Some days it's terrible. Other days it's spot on. I don't think it was anything I don't know. I think Jermaine Jones made a bigger deal of it than it actually was.
Yeah, but that's the Jermaine Jones' character as well, is just to be that enforcer on the field and getting guys' faces if things don't go the right way, right, Will?
I mean, the thing I will say is that sometimes I've seen games in which the officiating has determined the outcome. I don't think that the officiating was determinant to how well New England was playing. There was other issues that they were having outside of the realm
of
finishing
the officials'
decisions. Yeah, and finishing was one of them. So I don't think that this game can be blamed on the referee. I think that a part of it happened to go to bad refereeing. But then again, I think that New England could have put together a result regardless.
All right. So that's our thoughts on the game. We're going to preview more of what's going to happen with New England later this week. As I said, hopefully, we just got to get some final confirmation on this stuff. Simon Borg from MLSsoccer.com will be on Thursday. He'll help us preview the weekend coming up in MLS and really hammer home some good Sporting Kansas City versus New England stuff. So we have that there. Will Blasini, Brian Speaks in studio at the same time. It's like a colliding of worlds. Brian's happy.
We haven't killed each other yet.
You haven't killed each other yet.
We're getting along quite swimmingly. Yeah.
How would you say this experiment has gone so far?
I think so far it's good. So far it's good.
Yeah, it works. I mean, I don't know what you want me to respond to that as, but yeah, it works.
Say anything else.
Yeah. There you go. That's all I need to hear then. No, it's fine because we just want to make sure, like, okay, nobody's upset. Nobody's feelings are hurt here. Because people are sensitive
feelings.
Out there. There you go. That's all I want to know
it's
about.
A ginger beard gives me no feelings.
It sucks everything out.
Will is a big fan of Fireball whiskey.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, there we go. We're best friends.
Yeah. I was going to say, I have about, 10 bottles of it.
I thought you
were going to
bring the offering gift of.
I was, but I realized that it's honestly 9 or. It was 9 in the morning when I woke up, so. It probably wasn't the best idea to go to an alcohol store. I was probably going to get a lot of looks, especially since I was probably going to get it from the place that I work. So that would have been very awkward. Will, what are you doing drinking this early? I swear to God, I am not boss.
Just say, I'm not drinking this early. I'm buying this early. There's a difference.
Yep. I should say that. I should say that. 100%.
Party hardy.
I guess.
Or you could just say, this is America. I do what I want.
America.
I do what I want. I do what I want.
All right, Brian came up with today's big segment. I wanted to focus our conversation today on what Brian and I spoke about over the weekend. And MLS is doing its preliminary shortlist for its 24 under 24. And we have the shortlist here today with us. Brian's going to break it down at least 24 to 13 today. And then we're going to go 12 to 1 on Thursday. Is that right, Brian? I'll let you explain most of this.
That is correct. There's really no more explaining. I mean, you really said it.
I just want to make sure I got everything.
Yeah, right? Very concise with your words, Tom.
Yeah, that
very gifted.
To Twitterfy what Tom said. Yes.
All right.
Hashtag yes.
So, 24 under 24. These are guys that, first off, is the list online somewhere so people can go check it out?
The short list is online. The actual 24. So, the short list by my horrible mathematics, I believe, has 50 players on it.
Yeah.
So you're looking at 26 people who will be rejected from this list. That is on MLS.com. Right as you go there, it's like one of the key features. I believe the actual list will be put out on Thursday or Friday, which would correlate pretty well with our potential guest on Thursday.
That'd be great with that. That's a great lead in right there.
So I don't know about Tom, but I actually spent a lot of time doing my list. I take pride. I take pride in my list.
Wow.
I expect the MLS list to
you know what?
To be pretty much just
screw
like mine.
Screw my list. Screw whatever I had planned. You know what, Brian? Let's just do your list.
Well,
then.
No, we have to compare lists. So when I'm right, I want to be more right than you.
Well, we could compare lists all day and say who's better and not, but I want to know. We could just talk about the guys that you have on there.
So what you're telling me is you didn't even make a list.
I know.
That's what you're telling me.
What you told me last night is that you had a group of guys that you wanted to list 24 to 13 and you wanted to go through today.
Yeah, and I said, and I had texted you before and said, make a list. We were going to compare our lists.
I was going to say, I have a list, Tom.
Well, I have done my research on my guys.
Okay.
Okay? But I didn't actually make the. I can make the list right now. It takes 2 seconds to make. Wow. I shouldn't say that.
Wow. 2 seconds. It takes that's a lot of consideration.
Let me tell you, it takes a lot longer.
I'm pissing off somebody out there.
Right now. 50. 50 players.
I have a short list. I have a long list. I've crossed off names.
All right.
He has a sideways list.
Let's do 24 to 13 today. Brian's list, because I feel like we could also be here for 3 hours, you know, making fun of my list if I ever came up with one. Oh, Tommy, you only took 2 seconds to write it. You know, it's like ganging on the New Yorker the other day. Like, we're on Twitter the other day, and I'm getting ganged on because I don't appreciate good food places around here, I guess. Ridiculous.
Well, I will
Chipotle's
say
Chipotle's better than Moe's.
I
that wasn't
know.
The argument. The argument was Honest Taqueria is better than all of them, which is 100% true. That was actually the 11th commandment that was broken on a tablet.
Liking Chipotle over Honest Taqueria?
No, thou shalt like Honest Taqueria above all. That's the 11th commandment.
It still needs to happen.
I do remember that scribbled there. That was in, that was there.
All right.
I remember that there.
So, Genesis or something. I don't know.
Yeah,
Peter Gabriel.
I think so.
The 24 under 24 shortlist. The way this thing was designed, as Brian said, you can get it on MLSsoccer.com right now. The rankings this year, and I'm quoting the article that Brian sent me. The rankings this year, as in past years, are determined by a panel of soccer media members across the U.S. and Canada who regularly cover MLS, including from ESPN, TSN, RDS, Sports Illustrated, FoxSports.com, Goal.com, and the editorial staff of MLSsoccer.com.
And now, the Q-Spot Podcast.
You know what? And now the Q-Spot Podcast.
Bam.
Subtitle right there.
Boom.
Brian, Will, and Tom. Now, the way these guys are determined is based on technical skill, skills, dribbling, shooting, first touch, heading, etc. Soccer IQ, and that's based on positioning, reading the game, situational understanding, tactical awareness, etc. Personality, how's the guy's attitude, marketability, media savviness, charisma, intangibles, etc. And then potential. What is his improvability? A ceiling, national team potential future transfer value, and etc. So Brian took these factors and weighed them out and built us the list today, 24 to 1. And we're going to do 24 to 13 today, 12 to 1 on Thursday. The official list gets released later this week. And we have our guys ready now.
Do I get a drum roll? Number 24, Eric Palmer Brown.
Eric Palmer Brown, Sporting Kansas City.
Eric Palmer Brown.
I wanted him actually way higher, to be perfectly honest with you, just because of the rumors of Juventus interest.
Yeah, I saw those rumors too.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I don't know about Eric Palmer Brown. I mean, he has... I'm ambivalent to even put him on the list. I'm not going
to
lie.
I want him higher, to be honest.
You want him higher?
I do. I mean,
what were you thinking in terms of how high were you thinking of putting this?
Originally, I had him at number 20.
Number 20.
Number 20.
Wow.
So big on Eric Palmer Brown is, I mean, right now he's like, what, 18?
Mm-hmm.
If that. I mean, he plays center back. He's very small. I mean, he's obviously got a lot of growing to do.
17 years old.
17.
So keep going.
He's not
going.
Even 18. So he's got a lot of growing to do. I think he has tremendous upside. Like I said, Juventus just doesn't get involved with 17-year-olds every single day, especially from the United States.
Yeah.
For that alone, he's on my list. Like I said, I had him at 20, dropped him down mere minutes ago to 24 to just top the list.
Mm-hmm.
Eric Palmer Brown.
Okay. I mean, the thing is, I would say, yeah, he is on a bit on the smaller side, but that hasn't hurt. You know, he's 6'1", so he still has plenty of size. He's 175 pounds, so he still has plenty of the size for a center back. And I think you're right. Actually, one of the things that's hitting my mind right now is that Juventus has, you know, one of the best defensive teams, and they've always had a great pedigree of defensive players. So if they think that he is good enough to work in the what they generally put in the back three there, then he must be something worth looking at. I mean, I personally haven't seen much of him because he's only played in 3 games this entire season.
Yeah.
So it's like I don't really know where this is coming from, and he didn't play in any games last season.
Well, here's the thing about Palmer Brown that I'll throw in there. as we said, he's 17 years old. But the most encouraging thing about the kid is, and Brian, you alluded to before, Juventus, and Will, you did too, Juventus just doesn't go out and pick up defenders that are American and are this age. Because if you think about the caliber of players that Juventus breeds through their system, usually it's a lot of their guys, and you know it's similar to maybe what Russia does in a sense, I guess, for one
drink vodka.
Lots of vodka. But
vodka.
A lot of their defenders play in Italy. And a lot of their the Italian national team defenders, starting defenders, play in Italy, and a lot of those core guys play on Juventus. So to bring an outside guy in, like an American, who you know has very little experience, considering the fact he plays behind Matt Beisler and Arlen Collin already in Sporting Kansas City, as you said, Brian, impressive. 23. What do we got?
Oh wow! Real
wow!
Number 23. Fabian Castillo.
Oh, yes. Yes, 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 100%. I love Fabian Castillo. He is such an unbelievable player. He's such a fun player to watch. Every time he steps on the field for Dallas, it's like something special happens at the end of his foot. And he creates so many things for Oscar Pereira's team.
Yeah, that's probably in my... I don't have much to add on Castillo.
You say Castillo?
Castillo. It's my white side kicking it.
It's not Joffrey Castillon. It's Fabian Castillo. It's pretty easy.
Fabian Castillo. Castillo.
Say yo.
Yo.
And now add Castillo.
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 There we go. Now it sounds a little bit better. But yeah, no, this Colombian, he's mad good. He's really good. He has speed. He has agility. He has very, very tantalizing and quick feet, which is always great to watch.
And he has a good tactical understanding of the game from where I've read, too.
He's becoming a tactical player. I wouldn't say that he's a lot of flash. He hasn't developed his tactical game as much, but then again, he's young. He has plenty of time to grow. So if he does become that intelligent-minded player, because he has all the talent, but he needs to develop a slightly better soccer IQ, and that's going to be the biggest thing for his growth, in my mind at least.
All right. Brian, anything else you want to add?
No, I think we covered it.
Number 22, Steve Birnbaum, DC United.
The other drum roll was better.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, but we'll do it again. Let's do it again.
Do it again. Now I don't even have the thing up. There we go.
Number 22, Steve Birnbaum, DC United.
See, that drum roll is just so bassy.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah, I like it. Definitely.
I feel like I'm at the Copacabana.
That's on a timpani drum. That's why it's so good.
Mm-hmm.
But to Steve Birnbaum, I mean, what, number two pick overall, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't become number two and not be on my list. I mean, come on. Forget about it.
Look at you with the New York drops right there. Forget about it.
But I mean, one of the great things about him is, and what everyone has said and what I've seen, is that he's really smart. He's really intelligent, and he has a really good positional sense as well, which is great to see. And I think that, honestly, this kid is going to become a whole lot better over the next couple seasons.
No doubt.
Simply based off of the people that he's playing with. I think that when you play with someone... MLS veterans like Bobby Boswell, Sean Franklin, and Chris Korb, you're going to learn a thing or two about defending us in the MLS, and especially about defending overall. He's going to be really good.
Yeah, I was actually pretty disappointed that he didn't get a good look at the start of the season, but who knew that DC was actually going to turn it around? I thought he was going to be very impactful for his team right off the jump, just looking where DC was. So he has a lot of upside.
All right, number 21?
Number 21. Sunny Saad, Sporting Kansas City.
It's going to get old fast with the voice.
Yeah, yeah. We might have to, slow down with the drum. Slow the drum roll.
All right, we'll save the drum roll for at least when we're approaching the end of this list today.
Yeah, yeah,
all right,
we'll do that.
Sunny Saad.
Sunny Saad.
Sunny Saad.
Sunny Saad.
Sunny Saad.
Sunny Saad.
Sunny
Side Up?
Oh, God. Come on. Come on. That was just a bad one. Yeah, but the thing is with Sony Saad is he is a good player sometimes. I don't see too much consistency from him. Sometimes he comes on the field and is very impactful. Yep. Sometimes he comes off the bench and you're like, what is he doing? Why is he here? Why did they make this substitution? I mean, there is something to be No one's going to deny that his last season, or no, 2013 season. That was last season. Yeah, sorry. Last year was 2013. He had a great season. He put in a lot of goals, got a lot of assists, and he played really well. But this season, I haven't seen much from him, and it seems as if he's losing out to some of the better competition on his team. So that's really hard to see. But he is still a good player, and I think he can be good. Maybe we do the MLS do-si-do and move him around to a different place where he can get more time. But who knows?
Yeah,
this one's a toss-up for me.
He's definitely one of those players, I kind of equate it to like Ateel Bunbury, who is a good player. But he's just on Sporting Kansas City, where they just have so many good players up top. A
lot of depth.
Incredible amount of depth. Like, they could like lose like half their squad and still be one of the best striking units in the league. So that's what I equate it to. Like you said, well, he is inconsistent. I absolutely agree with that. I still think he has a lot of upside. He's a good player. When he's on, he's on. When he's off, you know, I don't think he's when he's off, he's not as bad as when he's good.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Anything else anybody want to add?
I mean, one of the things is it's really hard, clearly, to get playing time between the hot Dom Dwyer and someone like CJ Sapong, who I think honestly is playing better than him right now for this season. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I would have said the same last season, because CJ Sapong last season
was
it, what did you just say?
His Twitter handle is Big Africa, but keep going.
Okay. 88. Okay. Jesus. I just lost all my train of thought because of what you said, so I'm just going to end my point with it's hard for him to get playing time against better forwards, people playing better right now.
There you go.
Number 20, Mauro Diaz.
Torched the Revs. I'll say something about Mauro Diaz. Torched the Revs. We've seen a really good FC Dallas squad, I think, really all year. I think they've even overperformed to a certain extent with a first-year coach, not Oscar Perea. But Mauro Diaz is really a good player. He's quick. I think he sees the ball well. And I think he's a huge part to that attacking prowess in Dallas right now.
He was. I would say this. He was a big part of their attacking prowess. I mean, the thing is that when he got injured, the team clearly fell apart because they were missing him, but the team pulled itself back together after he came back, and he didn't get as much starting time afterwards. I mean, if we had this conversation in the first, you know, back in April, I would have agreed with you that he is one of the better up-and-coming players in the MLS, but right now I don't see that as much. He still has had a good season so far, but nowhere near as impactful as he was early on. Then that's not to belittle that he does have the talent, because he was such a huge part of that dynamicism going forward. And that was obvious when they lost him and picked up 5 losses in a row midseason.
That's a good point. I think that went under the radar a little bit too with Dallas. Anything else, Brian?
No.
Nothing on Mauro Diaz?
You guys covered it.
Okay.
Sorry.
No, it's cool.
Makes his job easier.
By
right?
all means, I'm just listing people off. I mean, number 19. Ready for this one?
Yes.
First Rev. Patrick Mullins.
We should have did the drum roll for the Revs.
Okay, well,
we'll do the drum roll for the Revs. Drum roll is mandatory for all Revs players.
We're not live, so cue the drum roll.
Yeah.
Number 17. Patrick Mullins. The New England Revolution.
Dun 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 dun.
Finally, a Rev. No, I shouldn't be saying finally. He's pretty high up on the list, and that's good.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's a pretty nice spot right there.
I know, I'm an anxious person. I don't have a good job of just sitting around and waiting for things, but Patrick Mullins.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're twitching right now.
Yeah. Rookie season, 17th, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Wait, 19. I'm the one listing them off, and I'm still wrong.
Former Herman Mack Trophy Award winner, started off the season incredibly hot, and the highlight of the season so far for Patrick Mullins, and probably for the first part of his career, will be the 4 goals early on in the season, and the strike past Julio Cesar in Toronto to equalize that game after going down early. That's one of the defining moments of that kid's career.
Yeah, he had a very good opening to the season. Honestly, I thought he was going to be playing a bit better, but then again, New England brought in or were able to find goals from a more surprising locations than I thought previously when we were doing the Super Draft. Exactly. I didn't expect Lee Wynn to just be a goal-scoring machine. Clearly, he was good, but when we were doing the draft, I said that I thought Patrick Mullins was going to be an important part of this team.
And he dropped down to 11th in that draft, mind you.
That was infuriating. Yeah. I was losing my mind
when
the Revs didn't pick him up fourth. And then when they picked him up at 11th, I was immediately happy.
Yeah.
Because honestly, Patrick Mullen had the talent to go number one.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%.
Like, he really has that talent. He has that ability. He has that upside. He has been cold lately. But, you know, like Tom said, four goals. It was in four games.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we know he can play better, and I hope that he is able to pick up some more experience next year. I'd like to see him used a bit more, depending on the way the rest of the season goes.
Charlie Davies has fit in fairly nicely for Jay's crew. I mean, you can't just, you know, you at least have to recognize that you haven't had the services of Patrick Mullins, and probably he's hit his ceiling for this year, but at least you're not struggling to find something to replace that punch that you
exactly.
have.
Exactly. And, you know, Charlie Davies is always going to be, or at least in my mind in the near future, he's always going to be the number one striker because he has that experience. And we know that when push comes to shove, Charlie Davies can dazzle for you on your team. But,
especially,
you know, hopefully Patrick Mullins gets some more time next year. I hope they utilize him a lot in the offseason during some friendlies, get him more comfortable. And honestly, I hope that he's listening to everything Charlie Davies is telling him.
Yeah, good points right there. I don't need to say anything else. Brian, 18?
Number 18, Shane O'Neill.
Shane O'Neill.
Colorado Rapids.
Talk about a team that went down to the gutters. All right, Shane O'Neill, what do we got?
Shane O'Neill is a question mark in my mind. I think that he's a solid player, but I haven't seen enough of him, and I don't think that playing at Colorado is the best place for his abilities, personally.
Yeah,
I think that he would probably have more success at some other places.
Yeah,
he would.
Colorado is just kind of a piss hole right now.
It's
just really, I think it's hard for any of the players to play there, and they do have a pretty good young squad. I don't think that a lot of those players stay there long term. I think that Colorado can kind of be like a jumping off point for a lot of these players. I think that, like you said, Shane O'Neill would probably do better on a different team. I don't disagree with that at all. And
I'm just thinking that I believe Shane O'Neill would look a whole lot more of what we expect if he had someone teaching him, someone really good teaching him, you know, the skills.
A guy like Kendry Thomas would have been great to learn from for a guy like Shane O'Neill before he went off to FC Dallas with Perea.
Yeah.
Kendry Thomas was with Colorado last year.
Yeah. I mean, you know, one of the great things that I love to see about this guy is that he's just a big Irishman. He's a big Irishman.
Yeah. I like the guy. I mean, he's a good player. Maybe questionably high. I'll admit that. But
yeah, I'm a bit surprised. I'm not going to lie. I'm a bit surprised he's this high on the list. I wouldn't have expected that. But
it's because he's in Colorado. Next.
Jesus. What's wrong with Colorado?
Nothing. You didn't get it, though.
Oh, he's high on the list. Oh, okay. Ha, ha, ha.
Number 17, Dylan Serna, also Colorado.
I love the also Colorado part about that.
I almost tried to break people up just so they wouldn't be on the same team. Like for a while, like at like 24, 23, and 22, I had like all FC Dallas people, and I'm like, well, that's just my bias because I don't watch them a lot.
Right.
Yeah. So.
But Dylan's got a lot of upside.
Yeah, I would say that he is a pretty good creator. He's been, especially it's hard to put it in context because Colorado's offense this year hasn't been the most amazing thing, but he has added a good creative element to that team, which I think they needed. He's very small, very, very small.
He's my height. He's 5'11". He's a Notre Dame guy, though, so don't be on him. Another Irish guy.
He went to an Irish school. Doesn't make him Irish.
Yeah. What are you talking about?
Okay. You know what? Don't. Obviously, my jokes are just going over everybody's head today.
No,
it's fine. I don't mean to throw
everybody off. They're just too high above us right now.
Give me something else on Dylan Powers.
On Dylan Powers?
Dylan Serna. Dylan Powers.
Dylan Serna. Excuse me.
Spoiler alert, Dylan Powers is on this list.
Yeah, of course he is.
We won't get to him today, though. Wink, wink. Thursday.
Dylan Serna. Give me something. One more thing on Dylan Serna.
I think he has potential of being a Gold Cup kind of player, just U.S. men's national team ability, I don't think he makes the full-on World Cup kind of squads, but I think that he has something that, you know, Klinsmann might be interested in for the smaller gigs.
Mm-hmm. I like it. What do we got, four more left here?
We're at 16.
We're at 16 now?
And number 16 is Tommy Thompson.
Tommy Thompson.
San Jose Earthquakes.
San Jose.
Will's
okay,
vagina.
So obviously we're all in
San Diego.
I was going to say, wait, we're confusing cities right now.
I'll admit to being a little ignorant on this one. I got nothing on Tommy Thompson. So,
well, the first thing that always surprised me at Tommy Thompson is that he is maybe one of the smallest people in MLS, yet he seems to continually impress me with how well he can contend with all the big people in MLS, because he's only, I'm pretty sure he's only 5'7 and about like 140-ish pounds.
He is diminutive.
You look at him and you're like, this kid's not a footballer.
He makes Diego Fagundes look huge.
Yeah, which is basically what it comes down to. Yeah, yeah. And the thing that surprises me is that he's always contending with these big players. So he's physically and mentally, he clearly has the drive and the desire to keep on pushing. And what I've heard, that he's like a really interesting person to have in practice because he always wants to learn, which is good.
Yep.
In terms of playing on the field, in terms of playing for San Jose, I haven't seen much of him. He's only played 9 games this year.
Yep.
And the biggest thing I would say is that, unfortunately for him, he has to play behind a group of guys that have really solidified themselves in that top 11. And San Jose, that lineup, they're all very close-knit, and they're also have been there forever.
Yep.
So it would be hard for him to break in, but he definitely has potential.
Yeah, he's so high on my list solely on potential, obviously. He hasn't played a lot, like you said, only 9 games, but he makes that team exciting.
And he also has a good soccer background. Yeah. Like, if you think about it, played at Indiana, so he's coming from the Big Ten Conference, which, Brian, you know is
Big Ten.
A great, great soccer conference. And he came from a really, I'm not going to say a great USL program, but he came from an established one, and one that has a great background within soccer realms, Sacramento. So,
the Republic.
You know what?
Built for MLS.
We'll get to that on another day, maybe with Borg on Thursday. But Sacramento is definitely a good breeding ground, if you will, for future MLS players.
Yeah, I'm obviously big on the kid. I mean, like I said, he's there for potential, and he's number 16. I mean, he's got a hell of an upside in my book.
Yeah.
So 3 more then.
Also, one last thing about this kid.
No, okay.
One of the things that has impressed me, though, is that whenever he comes on the field, he is wiry enough, and he's able to like weave around, and it's forced defenders to really pay attention to him when he's on the field. He is quick, and he can get out of tricky situations, and that shows a level of competence that a lot of players don't have, especially when they're playing in midfields. You know, you have your passers, you have your defenders in the midfield, but he seems to be someone that can just find the seams, which is invaluable experience, and it takes a long time to learn. So the fact that he already has that is impressive in my mind.
Number 15, Andrew Wanger, Philadelphia Union.
Wanger.
Yeah, definitely came off more like Wang than Wanger.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're saying Wanker. Were you saying Wanker?
Wanger.
Oh, Arsene Wenger. Oh, okay.
They called him that in the Open Cup. That pissed me off to no end. They kept, "This is Wenger," and I'm like, he's not German.
Wanger. Yeah,
like, I know it's Gold TV, so they're probably used to it, but my God, that was awful.
Yeah.
I think he's benefited so much from the move. I mean,
that trade is pretty much balanced out equal for both sides, huh?
No.
Yeah. No.
I would say it's more leaning towards Andrew Wanger and Philadelphia, because clearly they're in a higher position on the table, so it's benefited them a bit more.
And I love Jack McInerney. He's an absolute Revs serial killer at this point. Like,
yes.
He is just, anytime that he plays the Revs, he's just damaging.
Yeah, he's a great player. He's unbelievably quick, and he has a very, very good positional sense. And you've seen that when he combines with Connor Casey and Latu, they always seem to find him, and he always seems to get those great runs. And I think he's been a huge part of the success that Philadelphia has had. The one thing I would say about him is that he is not the most a phenomenal goal scorer, especially in front of net. I think that he struggles in 1v1 situations. I think that he sometimes is a bit hesitant, which you can't be as a striker. So, you know, sometimes you got to get the ball and you got to do it. So that would be the one drawback I have for him. But besides that, he's a phenomenal player, and Philadelphia definitely benefited on the trade over Montreal.
Well, I was just thinking, the more I think about it, that trade, no matter what it did, I mean, it basically took Jack McInerney and put him to obscurity and took Wenger here and put him in Philly. And now Jack Mac's kind of in obscurity. Like, I don't really know what Jack McInerney's doing lately. I mean, I just, Montreal, they're not a team that I'm going to go out of my way to watch. They're obviously the worst team, if not second worst team.
Jack Mac score or have an assist against the Revs back here in New England?
He always, like I said, every time he plays New England, he gets a point.
Yeah. And the thing is, you know, going back to the Jack versus Wenger argument, or Wenger argument. Wenger. Sorry. Now I'm confused.
Yeah. He's not German, Jesus. People.
Jack has scored more goals. He's had 7 this year, so he's had some sort of an impact with Montreal, but clearly it's not doing as much. Because when he was on Philadelphia, he had 12 goals, he had 8 goals, you know, going back to 2013 and 2012. The impact is not as big, but he... Wow, that was just so ironic. The impact is not as big. Montreal, Jesus. I made that without even realizing it. And on that bombshell, let's move on.
All right, what do we got, 14 now?
TQ, cue the drums. Number 14. Kellen Rowe, New England Revolution.
Kellen
he's
Rowe.
Not higher?
No, he's not higher.
14?
No, not higher. Sorry.
You sound so disappointed after an epic drum roll.
I am, because I thought that, you know, that means Diego's higher than Kellen.
Which burns me inside.
Oh, my God. You actually did that?
It burns me to my core. Burns
Ryan.
Me.
Ryan!
It burns me. But that's how you know I took this serious.
Very serious.
Because you all know that if it was just on my opinions, Diego Fagundes wouldn't be in my top 100. That's kind of a hyperbole. He'd probably be in my top 100. I don't want to get Twitter hate. But no, Kellen Rowe. I maybe he should be higher. I don't know. But Kellen Rowe. Maybe I also
just... This is. Hey, listen, man. You did the research on this, so you got facts to back it up. So,
and here's another reason. Maybe I put Kellen here as a cliffhanger because we're going to end at 14. No, we end at 13. Damn it! I didn't even do that right.
That happens.
Comes with my math skills again. I told you they're bad.
It's okay. Listen, he needs to know math. We're talking.
Let's say this about Kellen. It's been a tough year for the kid. He went down with the quad injury against Vancouver to open up the home opener back here at Gillette. And then you had the streak of games where New England was great without him, so he sort of saw his way off the bench onto the field. And then you said, okay, well, what do the Revs need Kellen Rowe for? And then they lose 8 straight, and you say, okay, well, we still need Kellen Rowe. This is a kid that I think a lot of U.S. men's national team fans should be keeping an eye on, let alone just MLS fans themselves. He's got a great shot. He's got great distribution skills. And Jay has made him, or at least he's probably done this before, because you don't just like pick these things up. But Jay has made him a MLS winger. He's outside, like on the outside, on the flank. You can trust him as an outside midfielder. Kellen Rowe now. Absolutely, MLS professional level, and I think he's a guy that U.S. men's national team fans should look over to.
You sound a little bit in love.
How can you not be? Look at those
eyes.
That's
true.
He was actually.
He is a gorgeous man. He will be on the U.S. national team.
Another bias alert right here. When I first started doing radio in Boston, my first player interview was actually Kellen Rowe. So there is a.
So that's the love connection right
there. That's the love connection. That's like Carl Robinson with Vancouver. I have a love connection with him. There you go with Kellen.
Yeah, I think Kellen Rowe is definitely one of two Revs players who are currently ready for the U.S. men's national team. The other one is also on my list. I won't tell you who he is until Thursday. But number 13.
Bum, bum, bum.
Jack McInerney.
Jack we Mack. Just talked about.
I feel like
Jack
we don't,
Mack.
I feel like we don't even need to say anything because we just covered him. We were talking about Wenger.
Okay, so then
so we
screw
just
it.
Say he's 13.
He's 13.
Yeah,
number 13.
All right, I will say this one big downside I have to Jack McInerney is I hear that he is highly irritable to be around and that he has a very, very big tood. Things I hear yeah. through grapevines.
I mean, it kind of portrays. I mean, I've seen him kind of flip his top more than once in a game.
Yeah. I mean, he has, like, you know, especially with Montreal this season, they've been struggling, and I think that has come to fruition that he makes runs sometimes or he messes up and he gets unnecessarily mad at players like Marco DeVaio and Felipe Martins around him. And he.
But as you said.
I think that's a detriment to him.
But to your
point. He needs to figure out his attitude.
But to your point before, I forget it was either one of you two made it about how Jack Mack goes from playing in Philadelphia to going to Montreal where absolutely nobody's going to know about him now. There you go, Brian. There you go. And then you got a situation like Wenger, who goes from Montreal, who nobody knows about, but it's a great player, and goes to Philadelphia and finally gets to showcase those skills. So it's a matter of frustration, I would say, at least from my opinion, listening to what you're saying, Will, about Jack Mack.
I think Jack Mack is frustrated because, as we all know, Montreal was a force to be reckoned with last year. Marc DeVaio was a goal-scoring machine, and that team had a very good offense. So I think he was expecting to show up on that team and have a more successful season. And he probably is, I'm not going to just say probably. He is frustrated that they're not doing as well. So, you know, maybe he does have the right to throw some tantrums on the field every now and then.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. I'd be pissed if I take Philly to Montreal.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
it also makes me think, was Wenger like that important to Montreal's success last year? Was he the like defining factor
Maybe he's the missing link.
And maybe that's what Philly has picked up. Wow, that was a good trade for them then. What was Montreal thinking, I wonder?
Yeah. All right, so let me run through this list real quick. So,
go, 24.
24, Eric Palmer-Brown.
23.
Fabian Castillo.
22.
Steve Birnbaum.
21.
Sunny Saad.
20.
Mara Diaz.
19.
Patrick Mullins.
18.
Shane O'Neill.
17.
Dylan Cerna.
16.
Tommy Thompson.
15.
Andrew Wenger.
14.
Kellen Rowe.
13.
Jack McInerney.
Come back for 12 through 1 on Thursday with me, Brian Speaks, and Will.
And check us out on us out on Twitter, and if you disagree, blame Tom.
Blame Tom, yeah. No, because I had all to say on this list, right?
Yeah. You added a lot to the conversation.
Why do I feel that was like a subtle shot at me?
I'm sorry. It wasn't even subtle.
That was straight shots fired.
I'm sorry. I'm going
Did
to
not
rescind
offer anything
that comment.
To today's conversation?
Can I rescind
you know what?
That
you
comment?
You know what? I'm not going to come in on Thursday. I'll set up the interview with Borg. All right? You guys do the interview with Simon. I'll sit behind here and do the controls. I'll let you guys run the
Just
show.
Just make sure
now.
The door's unlocked when we get here, please.
Yeah, a little unlocked. Yeah. It's hard to like try and reach for a handle, hoping for something, and then
just
getting
leave,
rejected.
Just leave it
by
open
door.
A smidge. Just a smidge.
Put one of those stoppers in there. Yeah. By the way, Tommy Thompson takes the cake with name alliteration of the day. Love it.
That is true. He may be the only person on the list with name alliteration. We'll find out Thursday if that's true.
We will.
Big city teases.
You know what? You radio professionals, you take it. I don't need to do this.
I only know these words from the Sports Hub. I'm sorry.
All right. We have a lot of other stuff to happen this week, as I said as well. We have to go through the rest of this list. Listen back to this podcast on my Twitter page, at the Q-Spot Pod. Follow Brian Speaks, at Brian _ Speaks. My man B, always coming in hard.
What's up, TQ?
What's up? What's up? Will's got to change his Twitter name because nobody can spell it.
No one can spell it ever, so new Twitter on the way.
Where can people follow you for the interim?
For this?
Yes.
For the interim? There is no interim.
So you deleted your Twitter.
I'm currently sitting in lingo right now.
Wow. I couldn't go like 5 minutes without having a Twitter.
I am disconnected from the system. I have been pulled out like Keanu Reeves. Hopefully not as slimy, though.
I'm going to take the Matrix reference and just go home with it. Thank you very much for listening to the pod today. Stay tuned to my Twitter, at the Q-Spot Pod. Gentlemen, thank you very much for bringing the heat and fire.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And all thank right. you.
We will see you. Stay tuned.